You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of November 1st, 2016, and episode number 287. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, I'm all refreshed after a week off, getting caught up on some of the events and things I've got to get prepared for. Well, I had one last week, but I got a big one coming up this weekend. I don't think I'm ready yet anyway. But anyway, here we are tonight. And this week's news includes an ice monster sighted in an Alaskan river. UFO creates panic in Austria. When do UFOs not create panic? And we'll also talk about the MUFON sighting statistics for October. Popular Mechanics raises a sledgehammer to paranormal tech. That's going to cause a little bit of controversy and trouble, but you know what? I'm going to tackle it anyway. Morgana strikes again, and the Bermuda Triangle mystery finally solved. And you're going to find out how it's been solved tonight. Wow. Plus, we'll have the book of the week, conferences, conventions, if I have any time, and who knows what else. Before I get started, though, I want to, my goodness, if you were listening last night in a little accident during the show, not my show, but Frank Lee's show, which we'll talk about again here in a second, Paul Kershaw, I had a little accident with some boiling water. So hopefully he's okay. I know he's in a little bit of pain, but we wish him well. And I hope he heals up quickly. A little scary incident last night in the chat room. I mean, it didn't happen in the chat room, but if you were part of the chat room, you saw that incident. It's a little scary, but that's the beauty of live radio. And this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is actually the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics, to quantum physics, to cosmology, to psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply the term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. And, well, I hope everyone had a safe and enjoyable Halloween weekend. Kind of a three-day weekend, I guess, celebrating Halloween. People having parties all weekend, probably. And then, culminating on the Monday night ritual. I don't know why it was Monday night this year. Kind of weird. But no clowns. I didn't hear anything negative about clowns and how clowns are going to do all kinds of scary stuff. Didn't really hear anything unless it's a little late in the news. But yeah, like I mentioned, I took last week off. The whole network actually took last week off. Kind of our 1 week of the year where everything gets cleaned, a little house cleaning and getting everything up to snuff and getting all the equipment working 100%. But that's not... Not to say that I didn't do something last Tuesday. And if you didn't hear it, I did a Halloween special episode last week. The episode included a presentation from an old radio play called Suspense. Now, I did this last year, and the episode I did last year was called Ghost Hunt. And this year, the episode is called Hitchhiker. And it was recorded live on September 2nd, 1942, and starred Orson Welles. The Hitchhiker episode would be rewritten for a 1960 episode of The Twilight Zone. Probably heard of that, right? You can hear it at pni.podbean.com or through the archives link on paranewsinsider.com. Of course, the show is live here every Tuesday night on WCJVradio.com at 7 p.m. Eastern, and then is uploaded to multiple podcasting sites, including Mixcloud, iTunes, iHeartRadio, and many more. So if you belong to that and follow the Paranormal News Insider, you should have gotten that delivered to you, or you can just look it up and listen to it. It's very entertaining. It's only about 35 minutes long or so, including a little bit of music. I got a little carried away at the end of the program there, but the little episode there of Hitchhiker is very entertaining and pretty entertaining. And if you've ever seen the Twilight Zone episode, it's a little bit different. They took a little bit of freedoms with that, if you know what I mean. But it's still enjoyable. And Orson Welles was the star of the radio program, so it's kind of cool to hear his voice. And yeah, that's that. Also, speaking of the network, last night was the return of Frank Lee and his show Paranormalities and Ponderings. Monday night? What? Well, no, he's going back to Tuesdays starting next week. So don't worry, you'll have an hour between my show and his show, so you can kind of get relaxed, ready to go for his 2-hour marathon of all things paranormal and all things pondering. We did quite a bit of pondering last night. It was a really interesting show. There were several moments, I got to admit, that I wanted to call in and jump into the conversation, but it was great to just sit back and listen to it. And I highly recommend checking out that episode, that archive. And you could find that through Facebook, searching Paranormalities and Ponderings. I know he's got a link up for it. Or find WCJV Radio on Mixcloud, where you can find all of the shows here on WCJV, including the Paranormal News Insider, Paranormalities and Ponderings, and everybody else that's here. Great mix of shows here on WCJV. So again, Mixcloud, find it. And last Thursday, I was at the Westerville Public Library. Had a little gang of my family go down there and take part in that and enjoy the little 2.5 hours of me mumbling and speaking at the Westerville Public Library, my 8th consecutive year at the library. That's just unheard of in this day and age. Really blown away by that. But also went there earlier this year and talked about cryptozoology, which was also a fun time. But it's always good to go back there and visit my books. Usually wish they're out and somebody was enjoying them, reading them. But it's nice to see them there at the library nonetheless. It's kind of a routine and a ritual that I have. I'll go down there. But great time down there, and I appreciate everybody that showed up to that. I've heard from a couple people emailing me questions or just saying that it was a great time, and I look forward to next year. I haven't put it in stone yet, but it's hopefully I'll be there for 9. And this weekend, got something else going on, Ghost Excavation Conference, taking place this weekend, November 4th through the 6th, at the Omni Bedford Springs Resort and Spa in Bedford, Pennsylvania. It's not your run-of-the-mill paranormal convention. It's a kind of a conference. It's a little bit different than a convention. This conference is going to be those people involved with conducting unique aspects of ghost research beyond just the basic tool kind of thing, or walking through haunted locations kind of stuff. This is the third conference, and I've spoken at the first two on the E4 method. And this year I'll discuss some of the success and failures of the E4 method, as potentially some new directions with it as well, and just kind of really a refresh, because I haven't really gone out there and talked about it in quite a while. John Sable and Mary Becker, who are hosting the event, will both be speaking, and also Robert Brad Kelly. Kelly Weaver, John Weaver, a friend and colleague, Brandon Masullo, will also be there talking about the ingredients for a ghostly experience. I look forward to that, even though I've kind of know a little bit about it, read some stuff on it. That's going to be an exciting presentation. And Jonathan Williams, who has an extensive law enforcement and forensics background, will be speaking as well. Patty Wilson, author Patty Wilson, is going to be there. I think she's up right after I am on Sunday morning. Yikes, Sunday morning. I got to get up early and speak. It's not my strong suit there. 10 o'clock. You may say, come on, Brian, 10 o'clock, you're going to get an extra hour of sleep. But we're going to be up late. We're going to do a ghost excavation the night before. What is that, you ask? Well, what is that? Ghost excavation. That sounds cool. Does it include heavy equipment? Well, I'll talk about that a little bit more. It's got something to do with the book of the week. If you remember 2 weeks ago, I promised that. And, geez, what else is going on? Well, let's see here. Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Got a little announcement about that as well. It's going to be returning next year. I mentioned it already. May 5th through the 7th, 2017 in Farmington, Pennsylvania. Steve Cole, Stan Gordon, and myself are returning as speakers again next year. Jay Baterchin, the Cubs are going to lose tonight. And host Eric Altman and a few others have been added. And there's rumored to be a big name coming to this event. It's already been announced that Trapper John Tice from Mountain Monsters will also be returning. He was by far the crowd favorite at that event this year. Tickets went on sale Monday morning, September 19th. And on Thursday of last week, Benner's Meadow Run Cabins, which is the home to the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, released their 2017 schedule and is now taking reservations for the event weekend. The Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, it will be intense. You get it? Intense? Camping? Intense? Camp? Anyway, okay. Well, I'll leave that joke where it is. And we're going to just jump into the news. Sorry about that. I know you're – hopefully Paul didn't roll his eyes too much. I'm sure that was painful if he had to. Cryptid news this week. Interesting story out of Alaska. But if you've ever – if you've been listening to the cryptid quite a while, you may have heard of a similar story to this over time. I know it's been at least once or twice I've talked about a very similar story to this. But it involves something mysterious lurking in the waters of the Chena River in Fairbanks, Alaska. An Alaska Bureau of Land Management employee saw the creature and was able to film it from a bridge. It appeared to be a creature moving back and forth through the current, and it was about 12 to 15 feet long. What was estimated, he didn't jump in there with a tape measure or anything. Speculation ran rampant as the BLM released a video on their Facebook page. Everything from a giant sturgeon to an unknown creature has been suggested by armchair theorists. The Bureau of Land Management opted not to go back and investigate the sighting, yet did go back a few days later due to the immense interest in the subject. But nothing was found, unfortunately. It actually had warmed up, so a lot of the ice that was seen in the video was gone. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game Tanana River management biologist Klaus Wuttig offered a suggestion to explain the creature. Klaus suggested the creature was actually caused by frazzle ice. Frazzle ice is ice that is loose, slushy ice that forms in water that could stick to objects such as a rope and would float on the top of the water. The likely suggestion for this purported creature is that a rope is underwater and that is tied to the bridge or nearly stuck under the water, and the frazzle ice attached itself to this rope and caused it to float to the surface where it was visible. While many people scoffed the idea, it seems very plausible since the object was merely floating with the current. It was not swimming, despite what it seemed like in the video. If you really watch it, it's not actually coming toward the person filming it. It's not. It looks like it's moving side to side, but it's really kind of the current. It's making the ice go back and forth there. And it was ice. I mean, ice stuck to a fish. That's not really something you would see in nature. And the frazzle ice explanation, like I said, has been suggested for a number of these types of videos that have turned up online over the course of the last few years. I think one in was it Sweden, actually. The guy actually won an award for shooting that video, got money for it. Wow. And I posted the link to that story that you just heard about the Alaska Chena River monster, whatever it's going to end up being called, if it's seen again, if it is really a monster. So if you're in the chat room, you got that little sneak preview of the story. And I'll be releasing these links throughout the week. Kind of want to change that. I kind of want to go to releasing the stuff as I go through the week, but you know, it is what it is. And you'll be able to see that story. But if you were live in the chat room, you could read a little bit more about the story, a little bit of detail. But I do the work for you. I kind of dig all the information out of it. And I don't usually just use one link. I use multiple links and do a lot of research I do that for you, the listener, because I care. I want to provide the reality behind these stories and not just drone on and on about what's in the story. And speaking of drones, see what I did there? UFO news, UFO sightings in the Austrian city of Vienna and also in Graz. That created a bit of panic over the weekend, this last weekend. Numerous photos of a bright white UFO hovering over Vienna were posted to Facebook and other social media outlets and caused a bit of concern by those who saw it. Many people actually called the police in fear of the UFO sighting. Well, what was the object? What was a UFO? A meteor? A drone? Quadcopter? What could it be? Well, the most convincing and most popular video showed people looking up at the object. It's got to be real, right? People were looking up. The camera's looking around. Hey, look at these people pointing at the sky. It's got to be a real UFO, right? Despite the numerous photos and witnesses, looks can be deceiving. And when I first saw the video in question, that was something that really stuck out to me. I noted that the person filming seemed to be more focused on the people on the ground than the object in the sky. If I see something like that, I don't care who's standing around, who's doing what, unless it's a clown running around. I'm looking at the sky. I'm looking at this object. I'm going to film it. The video is also extremely short, despite being filmed with what seemed to me to be an above-average camera. And even if it's a cell phone, should have had more footage than a mere 23 seconds. Now, the initial video also reeks of CGI. If you kind of look at it close, it doesn't actually look real, which is weird because, again, people were staring up at it, looking at it. Now, this would suggest that it's a setup. People were pointing at the sky, and it was kind of scripted, more or less. It's kind of what I'm thinking. So that kind of says something maybe viral. I don't know. Well, it didn't take too long for the facts to appear, even though it took a bit of interpreting German to do so. Saw this a couple of links, and people finally started to put all of it together today, even though I kind of saw it yesterday afternoon. On Monday, I was translating, thanks to Google, what it was said in German. It was kind of hard to read. It was really choppy. But other people who could read German a little bit better than Google kind of spelled it out. So apparently, the UFO was just another viral campaign, this time perpetrated by Warta Network, which is an advertising company in Austria. The advertising campaign was in support of T-Mobile. You know T-Mobile from the commercials. Come on. For its launch of Tinka, their new virtual assistant. Tinka. The South African UFO sighting last December. Remember that? The green UFO that was seen off and on. I wrote a blog about it. You don't remember that? Anyway, it's out there. Now, that one was done for an energy drink company. And it was kind of a bigger deal. It was a much larger video, viral video campaign. But this latest is equally as disturbing, again, because people were a little afraid of this. It's posing as something that's creating panic. It's negatively affecting subject matter that has real potential consequences on humanity. I mean, a lot of people believe in UFOs. And if there's all this talk about a lot more talk about space and exploration, so you can't really mess around with the UFO stuff that much anymore. It's not funny. It's cute, but it's not funny. Someone is going to take it seriously, and we don't want that to happen. So let me throw this in the chat room for you guys to gnaw on. So I'm going to throw that in the chat room there. And again, WCJVradio.com. You can jump in the chat room. Dita won't bite. Well, maybe she will, but not physically, of course, but she'll lash out, you know, if you do anything wrong. Great. I'm going to get in trouble for that comment. But a friendly group of people, a lot of great people in there every night, every show. There's the usual gang, the usual people, the usual suspects in there, but a lot of great people and a lot of discussion going on there, which is fantastic. So join it. Join the crowd. As Cheryl says, the cool kids are all in the chat room. So you better be there. Now, speaking of being, I don't see Audrey in there. Where is she at? Anyway, We're going to jump into MUFON, the MUFON sighting statistics, the Mutual UFO Network. That's what MUFON stands for. It's released its UFO sighting statistics for the month of October already. Yes, it's the 1st of November, I know. But I guess they've already had them compiled and sent out the email earlier this morning. And thanks to Audrey Hamilton, MUFON field investigator and chat room regular. I don't see her yet. Is she here yet? She arrived? Nope, she's not here. Anyway, here on the Paranormal News Insider. And she's other shows here on the network as well. I've seen her in there. We have access to these numbers today, the first. Wow. Well, before I get into those numbers, I'm going to talk a little bit about last month, September. Now, there were 652 total worldwide sightings with 466 here in the United States. Well, I predicted 675 and 471, respectively. I was pretty close. It's not bad. It's within a couple of percentages. But looking at September of last year, it's far, far and away a lot less, 985 last year in September. But September was a record, or I should say 2015 was a record year in MUFON sighting statistics, culminating in June with 1,402 total worldwide sightings, the largest number ever recorded by MUFON that I'm aware of. But that's much different than this year. June of 2016, a huge drop off from that of last year, 604 total worldwide sightings with 453 here in the United States. So a big drop off pretty much all year from last year. I think Hangar 1 had a lot to do with those sighting statistics last year. I don't know what else was in the media last year, but it caused a little bit of a spike in that. And potentially it may happen again this year. MUFON is kind of revamping itself. It's created a new logo and it's hired an advertising campaign. We covered this story a few weeks ago here on the Paranormal News Insider. So, you never know. It could grow. Sightings could increase and we'll see what happens. And last month with 652 was a little bit of a drop off from August, a little bit of drop off from July. I mean, come on, July, people are outside. It's a long month, summertime, it's hot. 710 total worldwide sightings, 520 for the United States. That was pretty much the peak of the year so far this year for both total and for United States sightings. So what about October? And what were my predictions? I know you're wondering, what did I predict? Well, I predicted 609 total worldwide sightings, and I also predicted 427 for here in the United States. So what happened? I'm not lying here. You can ask Audrey. The October, MUFON reported 599 total worldwide sightings, with the United States having 439 of them. So that's kind of close, 675 versus 652, 471 versus 466, pretty close. And Canada, our friends to the north there, they were second with 42 sightings, the United Kingdom third with 31, Australia, I should say, next with 12, Iran, Brazil, Germany, and France each had six reports each. Portugal and India had four reports each. New Zealand, Spain, Switzerland, and Mexico turned in three reports each. And Pakistan, Turkey, Norway, and Sweden, well, they had two reports each. 21 other countries turned in one report each. Of the 439 reports turned in by the United States, the number one state, no drum roll necessary, was once again California with 53 reports. Now, they're number one pretty much, come on, they're pretty much number one every single year or every single month, I should say. And there's a reason for that. Now, I also do the per capita sightings per state. And what I use is the estimate from the population from July 1st, 2014. And it's ranked, California's number one with just under 39 million people, 38.8 million people. Texas is number two with 26.9 million. Florida number three, 19.8. New York, 19.7. Illinois, 12.8. Pennsylvania, 12.7. Ohio, 11.5. Georgia, 10.1 million, and North Carolina, followed by Michigan, New Jersey. So you'll hear those same states because they have the most population. So it should kind of work out that way, statistically speaking. And again, California number one with 53 reports. Texas was second with 42. Florida third with 34. Pennsylvania fourth with 20. Missouri next with 18. Ohio, Michigan, and North Carolina turned in 15 reports each. Arizona and Indiana had 14 each. New York had 13 reports. Georgia had 12. Washington State and Colorado had 11. Nevada and Virginia had 9 reports each. Minnesota 8, Utah, Maryland, and Oregon, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Tennessee all had 7, and 24 remaining states, as well as the District of Columbia that showed up, turned in 6 or less reports each. No, it did not land on the White House lawn. We could only be so lucky. But looking at that, again, I mentioned that I do the per capita sightings. And just kind of look at that a little bit here for the month of October. And essentially what I do is I take the number of sightings per state from MUFON and divide it by the population of said state, and then multiply that by whatever number. Typically per capita is per 100,000 people. So I'll do that per 100,000 people to kind of get a look at that. Now, MUFON used to do this years ago. But I think they stopped doing it last year. It's a little bit of math, I guess. I don't know. It's really nothing statistically obvious to see. It doesn't really bring out any other information other than what state is really having the most sightings per person, or per capita, I should say, versus other states. So again, looking at the top states, it's really the top states of population. So they should be. California should always be number one. But looking at it per capita, California only turned in a 0.136 per capita with its whopping 53 sightings. Now, to compare that to something else, Pennsylvania, they only had 20 reports, but their per capita number is 0.156, so 0.002 better than California with less than half of the number of sightings. Now, Vermont had a 0.319, so that's, you know, a third of a person. Not quite, 200,000? It's just less than 200,000 people with their whopping 2 sightings. Nevada was third with 0.317 with their 9 sightings. And what I would say is the winner this month with per capita sightings only turned in a 0.296. That was Missouri. But it had 18 sightings, so that's pretty good. And New Mexico was close with 0.287, but they only had 6 sightings each, or for that state. Utah, 0.237 with 7 sightings. Arizona, 0.207 with 14. And Colorado with 0.205 with 11 sightings. So 0.296, it's not really that convincing. I mean, not even one person out of 100,000 people, not even one full person out of 200,000 people saw that. So, well, maybe that's why MUFON doesn't do that anymore. But to me, it shows you which state really stuck out amongst the other states. Because again, top states in population should appear at the top of any list that is taking data or information from all the states. So Missouri, something maybe was going on there. I don't know. You'd really have to break down the sightings. And again, I mention this every month. This doesn't mean that there was a lot more UFOs sighted in these states. That's just the number of cases that were turned into these states in that month of October. So, you know, I don't know. Johnny could have been sitting around and saw a UFO sometime back in May, but it just kind of like dawned on him now. Maybe I should report that thing. So now he's reporting it in October for something that happened in May. So it's not really reflective of the actual month. You're talking a lot of work to separate all that information. And hopefully MUFON is updating a lot of things. Like I said, they're updating their image in more ways than one. And they're looking at updating their the report methodologies. So hopefully to report all this stuff, we can break stuff down into actual physical reports that occur per month. Granted, that would change as time went on, but looking forward to these changes for MUFON. And before I get too carried away and move on from the story, I want to mention my prediction for November. Again, that was pretty close. I said 609 total worldwide sightings for October, and it was 599. Pretty close. Statistically, let me do the math. It's pretty close. And 427 for the United States, and it ended up being 439. So I kind of undershot that a little bit. So looking at November, let me think here. Let me channel somebody here so I can get this number. Okay, we're going to go with 597 worldwide sightings, total sightings, and 411 U.S. sightings. That's my prediction for the month of November coming up, in December. And I should have that information. That'll be the first show of December on December 6th. Looking forward to that already. There's a reason for that, too, which I'll mention here real quick. I just want to remind you that you are tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Now, I mentioned the December 6th show, something I forgot to talk about at the top of the show. Something I do every year. I've been doing it since, I think 2010 or 2011. And that is the annual top 10 paranormal news stories of the year. I conclude every year with a review of the top stories, and I kind of rank them. And I'll get more into how I rank them as we get a little bit closer to this time. And that's going to start on November 29th. The November 29th show is when I'm going to start the countdown. I'll reveal two stories each week, culminating in the top two paranormal news stories of 2016. On December 27th, it takes me 5 weeks to get through all this, folks, because I reveal two a week. Now, if something happens, I get sick or whatever, or the earth catches on fire, whatever happens, we'll catch up at a later time. And we'll cover the top 10 paranormal news stories, again, with the review or the reveal on December 27th. And again, I'll talk more about that, how I do that. As we get closer and as we get into it, just kind of gives you something to look forward to, folks. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. And you may have forgotten some of the stories that have happened during the year. And maybe you just started listening to the show. I don't know what you do. I don't know who you are. But we'll catch up on the year that was 2016. Yeah, got to get a little drink. This is going to be a long story here. And this is going to be a little controversial story coming up next here on Ghost News. I just read this story, so it's not like I picked this to talk about. It's just something that's involved quite a few people that I'm familiar with, and it's a pretty touchy subject, at least for me. A lot of people are just in love with tools and technology. Me, not so much. And last Thursday, I did a little conversation with the Westerville Public Library about tools and technology, and I didn't pull any punches about the tech. I explained how they're used and how they're misused, and unfortunately, people are reliant upon them when they really shouldn't be. So it's always fun to kind of get that off my chest and kind of talk about it, but I didn't really know at the time that the story was going to pop up, but I have to talk about it. It's in the news. And it's through popularmechanics.com. I don't know if the story is actually in print or not, but it is nonetheless on popularmechanics.com. And it's not very often that you see Popular Mechanics talk about a ghost story. Popular Mechanics is kind of scientific, but it's kind of a skeptical kind of magazine. I've noted some stuff about the paranormal over the years, just looking at that magazine, and it's. Yeah, they don't really embrace pseudoscience very much. So it's kind of interesting that they talk about ghosts. Well, it's not really a pleasurable article if you're really into tools and technology. You have a a large collection of Pelican cases full of equipment, or you spent a lot of money or reliant upon them for your investigations? Well, they released what I think is a very controversial, albeit true, article titled Proton Packs and Teddy Bears, the Pseudoscientific History of Ghost Hunting Gadgets. I really like that name. I think it's cool. Proton Packs and Teddy Bears, the Pseudoscientific History of Ghost Hunting Gadgets. I got to repeat that. It's cute. And anybody that knows a little bit about ghost investigation knows what a proton pack is, of course, from Ghostbusters back in 1984. And a teddy bear thing, yeah, that's a little bit of a new piece of technology that's, it's kind of making its rounds, I guess. Now, this article takes a historical look at how technology has played an integral part in the belief of ghosts, although the technology has kind of created more problems than findings along the way, if you read through the article. I'll take spirit photography, for example, something that's mentioned right after the teddy bear. This method was thought to be able to take pictures of ghosts when it was in reality double exposure that was fooling people, fooled a lot of people. Even the Abraham Lincoln's wife kind of fooled her there for a little bit. Now, in my take, despite spirit photography being debunked shortly after it made its debut, we're still being fooled to this day by cameras and video capturing things that have rational explanations. But the will to believe sometimes overpowers our ability to be objective. Back to the article. Also mentioned in the article was a piece of technology that most investigators have never heard of. Spider. No, not spiders. Spider. Spider stood for, it was an acronym, of course, because everything in the ghost field is an acronym, right? Spider stood for Spontaneous Psychophysical Incident Data Electronic Recorder. Spider. Although if you look it up now, it's kind of changed its name. It's, I don't know why, but it says Spontaneous Psychological Incident Recorder. It doesn't spell spider, but that's kind of how they explain it nowadays. I don't know where that came from, but it was created by British parapsychologist Tony Cornwell in the early 1980s. Well, spider was what they call a data logger. Now, that essentially uses different pieces of technology, EMF detectors. This one used some recorders, it would be analog back then, for photography equipment and other devices, all attached to a box that's hidden. This particular one is hidden from view. Some of them aren't. And it attempted to piece together just what happens during a spontaneous ghost event. So a data logger essentially is a all this gear is attached to a main computer or main piece of equipment, and all the information that's gathered from the environment is logged. So you can go back and you can look at the information at a future time to see just maybe what occurred environmentally during a episode of something happening, a spontaneous paranormal event. That's been used a lot, and many examples. I'll talk about that. But despite this spider thing being used for over 20 years, it never recorded anything significant. It's probably why you've never heard of it. Now, in my own experience, I've had the fortunate ability to see two other very famous data logging recorders in use. The most famous of which a lot of people have heard of is called MESA, which stands for Multi-Energy Sensor Array. A multi-energy sensor array, MESA, as well as Arcadia. Now, Arcadia is not quite as well known, but it's a little bit more current in usage, and that stands for Analog Reading Computer-Aided Digital Input Analyzer, and that was created by a team in Oklahoma and used in a secret hospital by the Oklahoma City Paranormal Research Group and Oklahoma City Ghost Club. And that secret location, still one of my favorite places I've ever investigated. I still tell stories about that location. But anyway, other inventions from these groups included DEVA, D-E-V-A, which stood for Dust Eliminating Video Apparatus, which is essentially an extended lens cover for cameras that eliminated close proximity debris contamination, or what we know as photographic orbs, because that orbs were a huge deal back in the late 90s, early 2000s. But anyway, back to the Popular Mechanics article. It states that a heavy interest in technology was born from the 1984 movie Ghostbusters, where fictional equipment was used to detect and catch ghosts. Well, then, of course, in 2004, the television show Ghost Hunters made its debut and began to showcase equipment that was more or less homemade, which really began a new generation of belief in tools. Sharon Hill, a geologist and science writer who frequently points out mistakes in the paranormal world through her blog, Doubtful News, points out probably the biggest gaping hole with the use of tools when she says, quote, "They're suggesting to people that environmental anomalies translate to paranormal activity. You cannot make that jump. You're dealing with something that involves an in-depth knowledge of the environment, electromagnetic waves, radiation, as well as how temperature can vary because of various things around the house and more," unquote. Well, personally speaking, I've seen firsthand how tools have been misused in the field. And one example I can recall is a group was doing baseline readings during a case. I was helping them kind of as an independent researcher at the time. They were doing their baseline readings using EMF detectors and temperature probes. But the problem was they were using this technique. They were just walking through the house during the day, noting electrical fluctuations and hot and cold spots. Well, at night during the investigation, they began to get EMF spikes. And over probably a little over an hour, I was jotting down times that this stuff was happening. I noticed a pattern was forming. I'm pretty sure it was about every 20 minutes, two or three times, and a skip about 40 minutes, and then went back to every 20 minutes. We were able to use EMF detectors over the course of a couple of hours to trace the timed fluctuations to a nearby building that was emitting the pulse. What I think was an alarm system. And those pulses, electromagnetic waves are not like, a huge wave. Sometimes they can occur at different levels of height, which I think is why we're a little confused. But anyway, had they not taken that time, or I taken that time, or forced them to take that time, we would have never discovered that. We would have never realized that something exterior, quite a bit of ways, it was probably about 200 yards away, is behind a building across the street, was actually causing all this stuff. But even then, a few members of the group were still convinced that ghosts were the cause of the spikes. I couldn't convince everybody. Back to the article again. Another person mentioned in the article is a known skeptic, Kenny Biddle. I've mentioned Kenny here on the program before, talking about various things. I think the last time was a UFO story. He's got a YouTube video channel called I Am Kenny Biddle. Aptly named, that's good. It focuses on various aspects of the paranormal, including the tools and technology. Now, Kenny has physically dismantled many pieces of equipment to discover what truly makes them tick, how they work, and has found that many pieces of technology, the popular ones especially, are designed to fool investigators. What? The ones designed for the paranormal are more or less designed for the entertainment of those using them, not actually to find ghosts. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that. They may not agree with that, but unfortunately, it's true. Now, on another personal note, I first met Kenny Biddle earlier this year. I've talked to him, I think, online a couple of times, at the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, which, of course, is it's intense. You get it now? No? Okay. Now, he's a very down-to-earth guy who he just questions everything, which is not a big deal. I mean, I had no problem being truthful to him about how I felt about the paranormal world and about Bigfoots, my techniques and what I was doing. He's just feeling out the Bigfoot field. And again, back to the article. Bill Chappell, the owner of Digital Dowsing and the main supplier of tech to the television show Ghost Adventures, as seen on the Travel Channel, declined to comment to Popular Mechanics for the article. Zach Bagans had initially agreed to comment, but changed his mind after talking with Chappell. However, in an email, Chappell pretty much explained his position when he said, quote, "I do not believe in ghosts or spirits. The unmistakable conclusion, it is us. We are the ghosts," unquote. So let that soak in for a second. The creator of the Paranormal Puck and Ovilus, the most trusted pieces of tech, which are actually the ones that have really and truly have the most flaws in design, are created by a person who has no belief on the subject. Remember that the next time you take data during an investigation using one of those pieces of technology. Yeah, they're made for entertainment. Unfortunately, the article pretty much stops there and does not really explore the reasons why the technology is a distraction and how it adds to the subjective nature of the field. While it does talk about pseudoscience, it doesn't explore the fact that ghosts are thought of It's essentially an extension of consciousness or the personality from a person who is no longer alive. With this thought, you cannot expect to get readings without human interactions, and you can't expect a piece of equipment to act as living consciousness to see the environment. So all I'm saying is just think about it when you're running around with tools. Maybe put them down. Just pay attention to what's going on around you. A lot of people, you're missing out on what's going on around you because your head is down looking at your piece of equipment. Well, you're saying ghosts are energy, right? Well, okay, so we should be able to measure energy. Well, that's just silly to say. I mean, not to offend anybody that's ever said that, but it sounds like something a kindergartner would say. Energy is essentially everything around us. It can be found from the hairs on our head to the carpet at our feet. Energy is everywhere. Energy is everything. While it's an extremely large blanket statement, there's still no verifications that ghosts even exist. Science says they don't. It's all figment of our imagination. That hurts, I know, but that's what they say. Yes, we've experienced things. I've experienced things that I can't explain too, but we've not proven that ghosts exist yet. And even if they do, how would we be able to measure them when we have no idea what characteristics we're looking for to measure them with? It's the definition of a conundrum. And sadly, groups are convinced that they have to employ this technology in order to investigate, in order to be taken seriously by other groups and even clients, because clients expect to see Pelican cases full of equipment being unloaded into their house in order to be properly investigated. I can go on and on about that all night long, but I'm just going to put that down. I'm going to leave it right there, and we're going to walk away slowly before I get in any more trouble. In other news, I want to talk about a story that I missed 2 weeks ago, thanks in part by a visit by Batman, who dropped by the studio, literally. And that involves a fairly viral story floating around the internet 2 weeks ago about the filming of a purported ghost ship in the Upper Peninsula in Michigan in the waters of Lake Superior. Yes, ghost ship. Don't say that 10 times too fast. Jason Asselin was at the location shooting a video for an alternative rock artist. And then after that, he was filming a rainbow after the crew decided to quit for the day when he noticed what he thought was a large ship in the water. He stated he watched it for about a half an hour before it suddenly disappeared. While many have jumped to the conclusion that it's a ghost ship, potentially that of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which sank in 1975. Now, others at the scene were fairly certain that the image was in fact a giant Jesus walking on water. Seriously. In fact, the image is more than likely caused by the temperature inversion process, famously known as Fata Morgana. This superior image, no pun intended, to Lake Superior, is called when warmer air essentially rests on colder air, which bends the light in such a way that a faraway object seems to be higher than it actually is. Now think about this. I'm sure you've experienced this. It works similarly to what's called an inferior mirage, which works such as the reflection of the sky on the road that makes the road look like it's wet. So it's kind of an inversion, an inferior. So the sky is reflected on the ground, essentially. I'm sure you've seen one of those once or twice. So that's pretty much the explanation for that. I know it's anticlimactic, but yeah, it is what it is. I waited 2 weeks to say that. Now, the Bermuda Triangle. This is a weird story. I've already heard like two or three explanations of the Bermuda Triangle just this year, but it's in the news again. Another person has discovered the solution to it. It's been solved. It's over. It's done. Well, that's what the New York Post said about a satellite meteorologist from Colorado State University that appeared during the television show What on Earth on the Discovery Channel. What is it with these TV shows? These scientists are stating that hexagonal clouds seen on radar point to massive downdrafts, what they're calling air bombs, which are typically referred to as microbursts in the meteorological community, are causing wind speeds over the ocean reaching 170 miles per hour, which is said to be creating waves as high as 45 feet. Now, could these random microbursts be responsible for hundreds of missing ships and airplanes said to disappear in the region in the last 100 years or so, Well, I think that's just a bit of hot air, personally. And the scientists who contributed to this television show, they actually agreed with that. Randall Cervini, director of the meteorological department at Arizona State University, who appeared on the show, had this bit of behind-the-scenes information to share, as he said, quote, "The ending on this was horrendous. I was really upset when I saw this," unquote. Well, Randall, that's television. That's what you get. The New York Post originally picked up the story and ran with the headline that the Bermuda Triangle mystery was potentially finally solved. And, well, you know, the media, everyone else followed suit. But that wasn't the case. Cervini offered the microburst observation as an idea that needed to be looked at as through the scientific process and didn't intend for it to be the solution which was portrayed on the show. Cervini also stated that the whole thing came as a surprise, as he did not have any input on how the information was to be used on the show. Well, obviously, you've never been on television before because you don't have any control, Randall. Welcome to Hollywood. That's just what happens on shows. It's producers. They come up with the stuff. Whatever sells cars, Randall. Well, maybe he'll get it. I don't know. Well, that's your news for the week. And we got the book of the week. Let me throw in this little linky dinky here about the story that I just talked about the meteorologists and how their story was misinterpreted by the media. Imagine that, the media misinterpreting a story, switching things around. Weird, weird, wild stuff, as they say. So the book of the week this week, and I had to go and I already mentioned it, John Sable. I mentioned this 2 weeks ago that I was going to have a book of the week with John's book in it. Now, it's not hard because John G. Sable Jr. has written over 30 books. Over 30 books. And you've never even heard of him, have you? Well, John Sable, his first book actually came out in 2007 and was titled Ghost Excavator. But that's not the book of the week this week. But that's basically his title, Ghost Excavator. And ghost excavation is what he does. And again, 2007 was his first book, and he's written well over 30 already, a lot of them on this ghost excavation topic. And I can talk a little bit about John. I met John back in 2009 at the Ohio Paranormal Convention, and he was talking about this ghost excavation stuff, and I was just like kind of intimidated by him. He was saying a lot of stuff that was true, that we were all saying here at the convention, that convention that weekend, everyone was letting loose about some of the stuff that was wrong with TV and some of the stuff that was wrong with technology. And just really, it was liberating to hear this, because you don't normally hear that, especially back then, about the paranormal. People didn't really attack it too much back in 2009, but it was starting back then. Most of us were. There was a couple people that were kind of TV people that we're not going to dare say anything negative about the field. But John told the truth, and he was kind of intimidating. But, you know, he's a former professor. He's got a very, very thick background in different areas, including archaeology, anthropology. And he's very educated. And if you read any of his books, be prepared, because it does read like a textbook. Because he is very intelligent, very knowledgeable, and very diverse background. Again, sociology, anthropology, and let's see. I think he had, I'm trying to remember where he – well, he's an actor too. Forgot to mention that. He's an actor. He was actually in First Blood. He was in what was that movie with those giant worms? I can't remember. But anyway, he's been in a lot of movies as well, and so he's a pretty famous guy. You probably never heard of him. Anthropologist, actor, author, archaeologist. And he spends a lot of time in Gettysburg. He's from Pennsylvania. He lives in Pennsylvania. Well, the book of the week, without beating around the bush, Digging Up Ghosts, Unearthing Past Presences at a Haunting Location, is the book of the week this week. And throw the link in there real quick for y'all so you can check out the book. You can look it up. And see if you're interested in this topic. It's a very kind of thick, difficult topic to talk about. It's ghost excavations. I really don't think I could sum it up in 5 minutes, but Again, I met John back in 2009, and you know, I presented that weekend as well, but I did cryptozoology actually with another guy. Jody Cook was on, I think, the Saturday. I was on Sunday morning, and it was kind of awkward, but it was neat. It was interesting. And John and I started talking after that, and we ended up doing a joint ghost excavation at a place called Farnham Manor in Richfield, Ohio. And it was kind of our test bed location at the time for my group, Ohio Paranormal Investigation Network. And it was very informative, and it was a lot of work, but it was very interesting. And it was really pulled in by this whole process. And John and I worked together, gosh, off and on, Mass Mysteria last year, conference in King City, Ontario, Canada. We did a thing in a church in a little railway kind of ticket booth thing. It was kind of impromptu, but having already done it a few times before kind of prepared me for it. And we were able to whip up a nice little ghost excavation right there on the spot. We also did the Daniel Lady Farm in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I think that was last year as well. We did a kind of a what they call a fizzle reel. We did a little short for a video for a potential TV show. Not that I'm interested in being on TV, but it was fun. But anyway, what is a ghost excavation? Essentially, a lot of groups are trying to emulate what John has done. You've probably seen part of it on Paranormal State. They kind of stole that from John. And he uses a technique called POP, P-O-P, participate, observe, perform. Essentially, you're participating in something culturally relevant to the specific time frame. Again, this is just for kind of the ghost hunting type of things. You know, like Gettysburg or haunted locations that have had a past history specific to a time frame and culture. So that's what we do. We dress in particular style of clothing, use particular dialogue, and try to resonate with somebody specifically of that time frame. It's not just reenactment. Reenactment is essentially for those participating and those observing. This, on the other hand, ghost excavation, is for those that were once at that location. And it's a pretty interesting methodology because it resonates with the environment and the location. So it doesn't matter if this is a residual haunting or it's something that's intelligent, it's still going to resonate the same way, which I find it fascinating. And the ghost excavation aspect is actually something I incorporated into the E4 method. And like I said, John has over 30 books. But this one here, I think, does one of the best jobs. I've only read like six of them. Sorry, John. I'll buy another one this weekend. But this book here, Digging Up Ghosts, Unearthing Past Presences at a Haunting Location, does a pretty good job of talking about the ghost excavation methodology and breaks it down pretty nicely about different things. And also the preface and the disclaimer really kind of break down really what he's talking about and why it's necessary to take a different look at things. And it's a pretty big book. It's pretty heavy book. It's a doorstopper size, 410 pages, but it's chock full of great and valuable information if you're interested in doing something different. And there's not an over-reliance on tools and technology. And one of the biggest aspects of this, of attaching yourself culturally to a time frame. Now, normally when you're presenting yourself as a 21st century investigator using tools and technology and flashing lights and all these different pieces of technology, you're looking at the horizontal landscape, where a ghost excavation goes back in time. It goes vertical in time space. And we're looking at, again, specific time frames. The location that he and I investigated together initially had very distinct time frames, 1920s, 1940s, 1980s. Each one, the building was involved in different aspects, different homeowners, different things attached to that location, as well as the local area that we could use to resonate with that local area. So that being said, this ghost excavation methodology isn't reliant upon the tools and technology to record things so you can go back, sit at home, and listen to what you missed out on when you were at that location. This has things happen immediately. There's an immediate turnover of things. We had a one of the ghost excavation. It was a Danish smorgasbord. So we created we had access to the menu. We created actual food, so you had to smell. We used Danish language, and we set up the home in the way that it would have been during that time frame. Had guests come in and sit down. So we really tried to replicate what was going on. It wasn't a reenactment, but it was a replication of that time. And all those different things, the smells, the tastes, the ambiance of the environment created some very scary, spontaneous things. And the participate, observe, perform aspect is when you participate in these things and when you see something, you continue. You don't stop and scream and shout and run out the door and say, dude, run. You observe what's happening. And that's when the fun begins as a scientist. You begin to document what happens. You continue with that process so others who are observing this are able to figure out whether it's something that's explainable, false positive, or are able to document this. And if you can create something like this that's repetitive, yeah, you could revolutionize the ghost field. And the coolest thing about all this is this weekend at the Omni Springs Resort and Spa, we're going to be doing a ghost excavation this Saturday. So again, if you're interested in that, come on out. Third Ghost Excavation Conference.webs.com. I don't know if they're still taking tickets, to be honest with you. I know they won't take them at the door. So check it out quickly. Get on there and see if you can still reserve a spot. Come out and join us in a ghost excavation. It's going to be a lot of fun. Again, the book of the week, John G. Sable Jr.'s Digging Up Ghosts, Unearthing Past Presences at a Haunting Location. And it's almost first pitch time for Game 6 of the World Series. Cleveland Indians, Chicago Cubs. I got to run. I got to catch this game. So again, big thanks to Cindy, my producer, for her wonderful work with this whole entire network, WCJV Radio, WCJV Digital Broadcasting. Great job. To Dita in the chat room, to Audrey for her MUFON sighting statistics that she forwarded to me right away. I really appreciate that. She really helps out tremendously. She has no idea how much help that really is. And for you, the listener, yes, you, I saw you turn toward the radio. Thank you for listening to this show, whether live or recorded. I appreciate it. Keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.